Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals this morning. We have two cases on our docket for oral submission. I understand counsel has announced to our clerk the time you need to argue, and if you all are ready to proceed, our clerk will call the first case. Ready?
We're ready, Your Honor. Ready, Your Honor.
All right.
The court will now call Cook's Children Healthcare versus Macomb General Hospital, and may it please the court, Mrs. Ricky Brandon to argue for the appellant, and Mrs. A. Craig
Carter
to argue for the appellant.
Thank you. Mr. Brantley?
May it please the court?
Yes, sir.
Counsel? Justices, my name is Ricky Brantley. I represent the appellants in this de novo appeal of the trial court's order granting the plea to the jurisdiction of the Nakona General Hospital and the Nakona General Hospital Employee Benefit Plan. Because there's a minor involved, I'll simply refer to my folks I represent as the appellants. While other matters are raised in the briefing and the briefs that I've filed, my argument will address the trial court's error in finding that there was no waiver of immunity under Chapter 71 of the Texas Local Government Code, particularly because of your opinion in the city of Denton versus Rushing that was recently decided in March of this year. And I do intend to address the Lesniak versus United Healthcare case that was cited by the appellants in their brief. The trial court erred in granting the plea to the jurisdiction since there is a waiver of immunity under the Texas Local Government Code, Section 271.152. The panel in Denton versus Rushing had before it really the same question as is raised here. Is there a contract which is subject to the waiver of immunity in Chapter 271 of the Texas Local Government Code, which says a local government entity that is authorized by statute or the Constitution to enter into a contract and that enters into a contract subject to this subchapter waives sovereign immunity to suit for the purpose of adjudicating a claim for breach of contract subject to the terms and conditions of this subchapter? The Nakona entities do not contest that they are a local governmental entity, number one, the first item in 271, and number two, that it has the right to contract. These matters are not disputed. They weren't dealt with in the original plea to the jurisdiction. They weren't dealt with in the trial court's order. The only dispute is under the third element of Chapter 271, which requires that a contract subject to the waiver of immunity must be in writing, state the essential terms of the agreement, and provide for goods or services to the local governmental entity and be executed on behalf of the local governmental entity. The same matters that this court, this panel addressed in the city of Rushing versus Denton, except that was a unilateral contract, and this one is not. There are actually three documents that come into play under the Nakona General Hospital Employee Benefit Plan. The first is the benefit plan, and it's included in your appendix, and I'm going to refer to it extensively. The second is the excess policy that covers benefits over $50,000 paid by the plan. It's also included in your appendix, and I'll refer to certain sections of that. The third is the group resources contract that deals with the contract between the Nakona General Hospital and the group resources who made the decision regarding the denial of this claim under the benefits plan. All three of these documents are signed. If you look at the appendix, and the record is, record number is 1104, at the bottom, I think it's the first document, probably the right after the order. It's the fifth page in the appendix, signed by the CEO of the Nakona General Hospital. And I'm going to go through this plan some, but you can simply look at this first page, and it says the purpose of the Nakona General Hospital Employee Benefit Plan is to provide reimbursement of covered charges incurred as a result of medically necessary treatment for illness or injury of the company's eligible employees and their eligible dependents. The company caused this instrument to be executed by its duly authorized officers on the first day of January 2015, and that's signed by the CEO of Nakona General Hospital. If you look at the foreword, which is at a page 1106 in the appendix, to all employees, it says, "We are all aware of the financial disaster that a family may experience as a result of a serious or prolonged illness or accident. The medical benefits available under the Nakona General Hospital Health Benefit Plan and described in this plan document and summary plan description are designed to provide some protection for you and your family against such a disaster." Then if you look at the next paragraph, it says, "The cost of this plan is in direct proportion to the claims paid. Therefore, it is important that all employees and their families use the plan wisely so the cost will remain affordable to all of us." The plan documents continue and have the in there at a page 1136. All employees contribute to the plan. Employees do contribute towards the cost of employee and dependent coverage. 1136 also has a provision that says benefits for a covered person are determined by the covered person's eligibility, classification, and by the terms of the plan. One of the most significant, it talks about the fact at page 1139 that the payments made by the employees are pre-tax. It goes into such detail that it talks about the non-taxability of the premium payments into the plan. It talks about the cost of continuation coverage. It talks about when the plan will terminate. 1146 begins an extensive description of the benefits available under the plan. And probably most significant on 1153 is the exclusion for illegal acts that was actually used by Nakona and its third-party administrator group resources to deny payments under the plan. The Nakona used the plan to determine whether payments should be made. If you look at the Fidelity Life policy that's also in there, it's also a part of this plan. It has an extensive provisions in there as to the premiums that are to be paid, how much the premiums are, how much the employees are to pay to get covered under this plan. There is a contract. There are actually three separate contracts that deal with all this. And in addition to the contracts, the court will see in the record beginning at about page 1184, that's not in your appendix, but I took the deposition of Lance Meekins, the CEO of the Nakona General Hospital and the one who signed all these contracts. At page 1184, is there insurance involved? Yes, at a certain level or over a certain level, at $50,000. Once a beneficiary exceeds $50,000 in claims, the reinsurance carrier kicks in. Page 1185 of the court's record. Do you take money out of the employee's paychecks to fund the plan? Yes. Question. And one of the eligibility requirements is they have to serve as an employee for the Nakona General Hospital, correct? Yes. To serve as an employee of Nakona General Hospital, you have to provide a service for which you get paid for. Employees render services to the hospital, don't they? Yes. So a part of the payment or benefit for the services that these employees render by nature, by what you said that you did in order to be able to recruit employees, a part of what the employees get for serving as employees of the hospital district is the ability to be a participant in the plan. As a benefit, yes. Correct. As a benefit, correct. And then Mr. Meekins admits that he's a part of the Nakona General Hospital plan, that he pays for the contractual benefits under those plans, and that he expects that the claims to be paid under the contract. This is a contract. It's a contract under 271 of the government code. The Texas Supreme Court has addressed this as well as this court, and I keep going back to City of Denton versus Rushing. If I decided in my brief, I could have probably made the brief a little bit shorter, but it is a contract, clearly, that the Supreme Court says many times we're looking for cities to be responsible for contractual liabilities that they incur.
Mr. Brantley, while you're talking about the employee and the service the employee would be giving to the hospital, was there a written contract? I didn't see a reference to there being a written contract of employment in this case between the mother and the hospital.
There's not a written contract of employment, Your Honor. It's a common law contract of employment. You all addressed the same thing. This panel addressed the same thing in the City of Denton case.
I understand. I just want to know if there was, just not mentioned, a written contract defining the duties of JW in relation to her employment with the hospital district.
There's not a written contract of employment, Your Honor.
Was there a written contract as between, if you know, the person signing this contract as whatever his title is, executive director or whatever his title is, did he have a written contract?
Not of employment. Not that's in the record, Justice Meyer. I'll qualify that.
An employee is defined as a person who's working and providing services, and that's as far as we go in defining what the daily activities or what the consideration would be that the employee would be providing in exchange for getting paid a wage.
Correct.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Your Honor. Thank you. I want to talk a little bit about two things, because the same issue that was raised in the City of Denton has been raised by Mr. Carter in this case, who's done a good job, but he talks about the provision in this contract as existed in the City of Denton contract that says this shall not be considered a contract of employment. But as Justice Myers has pointed out, as the justices know, simply because there is a provision that says this shall not be construed as a written contract of employment does not prohibit or forbid the local governmental entity from entering into secondary or tertiary contracts with their employees, such as this one, to provide health benefits. Now, if I could briefly talk about the Lesniak case out of the City of Austin.
Please.
That case initially started as a case against United Healthcare, who was a third-party beneficiary for the City of Austin. That case, the plea to the jurisdiction was denied, and it went up on appeal. And it's very significant that the Court of Appeals in Austin said, we recognize that services can be a consideration to the city, but based on the record that has come up on appeal, all we have is this administrative service agreement with United Healthcare that doesn't provide the language of a contract. It doesn't say what the contract's going to provide. Therefore, based on the record before us, they rule that 271 doesn't apply. That's not what we have here. We have three written contracts signed by the entity. We have payment made both by services rendered and by premiums payment that are clear in the records. And we have the denial based upon the language of the contract itself. So and we have a deposition describing that he had the authority to sign it, that this was a contract that he expected to rely upon. So I know my yellow light's on. I'm going to sit down at this point, and I'll save the rest for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Brantley.
Thank you, Justice Walker.
Mr. Carter?
Thank you, Your Honors. Mr. Brantley. I'm representing the Nakona Hospital District and the plan in this case. And I'm just going to kind of cut straight through to what I think is the key point for this appeal, and that is I think that Lesniak case is the controlling case. And I think it's especially now the controlling case since the Supreme Court denied the petition for review on that Austin Court of Appeals opinion in July.
Mr. Carter,
yes,
do you agree that the issue in this case, it seems from your briefing that you do, so correct me if I'm wrong, that you concede or admit that Nakona General District Hospital District is a local governmental entity and that they're authorized to enter into a contract?
Yes, Your Honor.
And really we're focusing on the third issue, and as I read your brief, you agree that there's a written contract and you agree that it's properly executed. Your issue is whether it states the essential terms in the services element?
I think that's the key issue. I'm not sure I would agree that that plan document is a contract. Now, there are contracts between Nakona General and their reinsurer. There's a reinsurance contract that pays over for claims that are over $50,000, but that's not a contract with the appellants. That's a contract between Nakona General Hospital and their reinsurer to pay claims that when Nakona pays out more than $50,000. That never even came into place here. That contract only kicks in when Nakona General pays the money. That never happened here. So that contract never even kicked in. There's a separate contract with Group Resources between Nakona General that the appellant is not a party to, where Group Resources administers the plan. So those are contracts, but the plan document itself, which is what Mr. Brantley has cited to throughout in his brief and he talked about in his argument, I don't think I can see that's a contract, but I think the even more important issue, the key issue is, even if it were, it doesn't contain the essential terms of an agreement with the claimant for the claimant to provide services to the governmental entity. So I agree that that is the key issue in the case, Your Honor.
Okay.
So these terms you're just talking about, counsel, would that be terms describing the actual work duties of each employee in order for the employee to have had enough description of the work they're performing to attain the benefits of this plan?
I think if that language had been included in the plan document, that it might very well be a contract under Chapter 271, but that plan document contains no such language.
How many employees are there and are covered? Oh, that, excuse me. I'm not sure covered is the right word in terms of your position, but how many employees were there for the Nakona General Hospital?
I don't know the exact number. I would estimate between 100 and 200.
So it should have been 100 or 200 descriptions of the daily duties of each employee in order for there to be adequate description to meet the requirements you're talking about.
It would have to describe the time for performance and the work or duties to be performed in order to have the essential elements of a written contract for services. And this plan, of course, contains no reference to a requirement to perform any services by the appellant whatsoever.
So your position is that any contract that a local governmental entity enters into with a third party to provide benefits for employees is not a contract under 271?
It's my position, and I believe it's the Supreme Court's position also after they denied the petition for review in the Lesniak case. I mean, I think that Lesniak case is right on point. They looked, and that Lesniak case, the plan document was in evidence before the court, and they looked through the plan document, and they said there's nothing in this plan document that sets out the essential terms for the appellant to provide services to the governmental entity. That's exactly what we have in this case. There's nothing in the plan document that spells out any services that the appellant provides to the governmental entity whatsoever.
So if a Nakona General Hospital District employee had a benefits contract for retirement, and they paid in all the monies for it they have no recourse if they're not paid.
That would depend on the specific terms of an agreement. If there, under your question, there was a contract. If there was a contract, it would just depend on the specific terms of the contract. But under Chapter 271, that might very well be the case.
So what is it that you think should have been in the benefit plan that wasn't in it? What essential term do you think should have been in the benefit plan to make it a contract under 271?
I think it there may be any number of things. It had to specify what services the appellant provides to the governmental entity, and it had to state time of performance and specify what the performance was. Somewhat like Justice Meyer was indicating, like a job description perhaps, like an employment contract. And there was an employment contract here. It was just an oral at-will employment contract, just like every other, or just like the majority of other employed individuals in the state of Texas, just like in the Lesniak case. So if an oral at-will employment contract were enough to turn a plan document into a 271 contract, then the Supreme Court in Lesniak would have granted the petition and reversed, but they didn't.
So this plan basically means nothing, does it? I mean, under your theory, the claim could be denied for a wrongful reason. I'm not saying this case is that case, but it could be denied for no reason whatsoever, and the covered individual who had paid for their insurance would have no recourse.
Yes, and that's the same result that happens in many of my cases when I represent governmental entities, whether it be tort claims or contract claims. And the claimants in those cases say very similar things. Wait a minute, I was badly injured in this matter, and I have no recourse. And the legislature says that's correct.
And these people paid premiums for years, potentially, and really have no assurance that their claim is going to be honored.
They have an illusory benefit.
That is true, because that's what the legislature said. I didn't say it. I didn't write the law. That is the law that the legislature has handed down, and that this is the way it's been interpreted by the Supreme Court in the Lesniak case. But I will say there's absolutely no evidence.
They didn't really interpret it. They just simply denied the petition.
Well, they did. They could have granted the petition and reversed. And that case is the most factually on-point case that we have, and the Supreme Court could have ruled differently, and they did not. So I believe that case is dispositive. I would say there's absolutely no evidence in the case of any sort of mishandling or sort of arbitrary determinations by the Nakona General in terms of their health plan. I mean, they pay benefits under that health plan all the time.
That's what the trial on the merits would have decided had the plea to the jurisdiction not been granted. Then you could have made that argument. That's not really the argument for us to consider, is it?
Sure, that's true. That's the same in every time any plea to the jurisdiction is granted. And you know, the statutes allow for a plea to the jurisdiction, and the Supreme Court has said a plea to the jurisdiction is an appropriate vehicle in governmental immunity, and so that is correct. And I have case after case where the claimants feel like governmental immunity results in a harsh result. And my argument that the only argument I have is it's up to the legislature. The legislature makes that decision, and they have defined what is a contract where there's a waiver under Chapter 271, and it's only a contract that contains the written essential terms for services or goods provided to the governmental entity. So paying the governmental entity for services doesn't work under 271. It's only if the governmental entity, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Excuse me, do you agree that there's a contract in the record between Nakona General Hospital District and the plan administrator and the reinsurance company?
Yes.
Okay, so really then, the contracts do meet 271, 151, 2A, because they are a written contract stating the essential terms of the agreement for providing services to the local governmental entity that is properly executed on behalf of the local governmental entity. You're just saying that basically as third-party beneficiaries, the employees don't have standing to claim that, claim under that contract.
I'm saying more than that, too. Those two extra contracts don't contain the essential terms for the claimant to provide services in Nakona General Hospital.
And but where does the statute say that the claimant has to provide services to the hospital district or to the local governmental entity?
The Supreme Court said that in Lubbock County Water Control and Improvement District versus Aiken. Supreme Court said that the general type of contract that applies under 271 is one where the governmental entity has agreed to pay the claimant for services that the claimant provides to the governmental entity. And we just don't have that here.
So you're saying basically all that could qualify under that is a contract for employment?
Correct. Or a contract for some other services by the claimant. It doesn't have to
be
employment.
So an insurance coverage plan could never qualify?
Well, it would depend on the specific terms, but this one clearly does not, because it doesn't set out any services that the claimant provides to the governmental entity.
Mr. Carter.
Yes, sir.
Do you have the appendix?
I have the plan document.
Yes. Would you look at page 20? Do you look at page 22?
Yes, sir.
This is the definition section. It has a definition of employee. That's meant to describe who it is that the plan is supposed to be providing benefits for. Am I right about that?
Yes, sir. It's an eligibility requirement.
And when you read the definition of employee, it covers that the people have to work 32 hours a week and the company classifies them pursuant to its regular administrative practices as a common law employee. And then it's got exclusions. How can you be more clearly, how can you indicate more clearly that you're intending to provide benefits to the people that you as an entity, I'm talking now you meaning the hospital, have got out there working for them? It's beyond me to understand how you have to have a description of each employee's daily duties in order for this to be meant to cover to provide a benefit to those employees.
Well, the plan sets out eligibility criteria for who's eligible under the plan, and it includes employees, and it includes beneficiaries who've never done a day of work for the plan or for Nakona General Hospital. So eligibility criteria is not the same as an agreement that sets out the essential terms for services provided to the governmental entity.
You read this and you think that you're an employee and you think that you're covered, but it's merely illusionary.
Well, unless and until the legislature says it's not, it is. But that's not, you know, that's the legislature's determination whether good or bad. I was thinking of something else to say also. Oh, again, I go back to the Lesniak case.
I understand.
There was a plan document in that case that defined eligibility, and I'm sure they defined employee in that plan. But it wasn't enough for the Supreme Court to grant the petition. So I really do believe that's controlling in this case. That's my view of it. Defining an employee is not the same as an employee contract. If this were a contract for employment, it would, I believe, suffice, but it's just not, just like in the Lesniak case. Because the contract for employment was an oral at-will contract. I'm trying to think if I had any other points. I think I pretty well covered it. We didn't get into the proprietary versus governmental distinction, but I think that's clear from the briefing that that doesn't apply except to municipalities. So I think that's our position. I think I've stated it clearly. In the Denton case, the on-call policy in that case did specify what the employees had to do to get the on-call pay. They had to be on call. They had to show up within 30 minutes. They had to follow the city's employment policies, including the substance abuse policies. We don't see anything like that in this plan. I mean, we do have a definition of what an employee is, but we don't have anything that says you provide these services to the government and the government pays you for those services. And because of that, therefore, I believe, I think it's clear under Lesniak that it's not a contract under 271. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Carter.
Briefly, may it please the court? Lesniak's not controlling. Lesniak is an unpublished decision out of the Austin Court of Appeals that all that happened is the Supreme Court denied writ. I do believe, though, that Lesniak is different than this case because it says on the record before us, and they don't, we don't know what that record contains. We know in this record we have three signed contracts. We have a 75-page plan document that defines employees. We have insurance contracts with exclusions that are used to deny the claim. And we've got an extensive premium schedule in the Fidelity insurance contract that's in the appendix. It's page 1222 in the court's record, and it's actually the second item, third item in the appendix that talks about how the employees pay. There are two Court of Appeals cases, Galveston Independent School District versus Clear Lake Rehabilitation Hospital, 324 Southwest 2nd, 802, this is cited in my brief, holds that the exchange of medical insurance coverage for employment is a sufficient contract under Chapter 271 of the Texas local of Texas Government Code. South Coast Spine and Rehabilitation PA versus Brownsville Independent School District, and I've just got the Westlaw site on that, 2014 Westlaw 12-1789546 out of Corpus Christi also holds that the exchange of medical insurance coverage for employment is a sufficient contract. The Birdson case in 2016, the Texas Supreme Court says in the purposes of 271 is that services are not as, let me see if I can find the exact language. I apologize, Justices, but oh my goodness, that's what I get for bringing so much paper to this thing. The Birdson case, the Texas Supreme Court said, in Kirby Lake, we explained that the term services in Chapter 271 is broad enough to encompass a wide array of activities. Justice Walker, this was your question. It addressed. Fidelity has provided services. Group Resources provides services. Under this plan, and they're both set out in the group resources in the Nakona General Hospital Employee Benefit Plan, the employees provide services. The agreement to provide services to the governmental unit need not be the primary purpose of the agreement. Justices, we would request that you reverse the ruling of the trial court below, granting the plea to the jurisdiction, and remand the case for further deliberations by a jury and a trial court to determine the facts and the law as it relates to this benefit plan. Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Justices.